And now, Diane Carlson Evans.
I'm going to read some remarks made by my next guest for the parade commemorating the 25th anniversary of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Then, one day, Americans watched as the memorial was dedicated. Their eyes saw thousands of veterans marching or limping proudly in a parade down Constitution Avenue. Worn-out combat boots, boonie hats, field jackets, jungle fatigues, crutches and canes, wheelchairs, amputations, disfigured limbs and bodies, red crosses, unit patches. They saw that we had children and families who loved us. We had hearts. We had tears. We had memories and stories of bravery, heroism, passion, and purpose. We had strengths and vulnerabilities. We served with honor and pride. And some of us were even women.
I wrote that for my speech that I gave at the 25th anniversary of the dedication of the wall, which took place in 1982. It came from my memories of being there that day, and I thought I had put Vietnam behind me until I learned that there would be a memorial dedicated to Vietnam veterans, which came as quite a shock, given the fact that I felt like the nation had forgotten us after all those years. And like President Ford had said when he was in administration, let's put Vietnam behind us, which was actually an insult to all of us.
I understand what you're saying.
Well, when I heard President Ford make this remark about how do you put a war behind you?
Not quickly, like it's sweeping it under the rug.
That let's not talk about it. It's gone, it's over, it's done with. Well, it wasn't over and done with. And for those of us who served there, we certainly, it was still very much a part of our lives, and it was still very much a part of America. It was our history.
Now, do you remember your first day in Vietnam?
Yes, I do.
Do you remember your sensations that you
Well, felt? I remember how ridiculous it was that we arrived as women in Vietnam with high heels, nylons, short skirts, purses, and we're going into a war zone and they send us like that, and no instruction. We'd had basic training, but we had no instruction in using a weapon, obviously. And so, first of all, where in the military wisdom did they think to send us over there like that? And of course, the flight, we were miserable because we were dressed up like that. And then the plane lands and it's dark. And the troops with their bandoliers open the door to the plane and tell us to get out fast, keep our head down, and to get on the bus.
Was this in Tansanut? No?
Yes.
Okay.
And,
that's in Saigon.
And then it's hot, it's August, and the smell is horrible, and the stench, the heat, all of that. And then we get into a bus, and it's like we're in a black hole because the bus, the windows on the bus are painted black and have chicken wire or something on the windows.
Well, at that time, kids were throwing grenades into buses, if you remember.
So I got on the bus, and then they took us to the 24th, I think, 90th Replacement Center. Where the nurses
Long Bend.
In Long Bend. And then I was assigned to a 60-bed post-operative soldiers that were either going into surgery or had come out of surgery, and every bed was full. And I realized this was going to be a busy time. But then I was transferred up to Pleiku. I requested a transfer.
How long
I wanted
were
to
you
go
in
Bung
Tau then altogether?
6 months.
6 months, okay.
And then I requested a transfer. I wanted to go further north.
Okay, now Pleiku, Central Highlands, as I think I remember the description of where it was. And it was fairly close to the Cambodian border, wasn't it?
It was. And as soon as I got up there, because I did have, a good report when I left Vung Tau, and when the chief nurse transferred me, she gave me my wish. I wanted to go where the fighting was. I wanted to go further north. Well, Pleiku was kind of the epicenter of fighting in January, February, March of Vietnam. It was bad all
that
over.
That would have been 69.
69.
Right.
And they made me head nurse on a surgical unit.
In the information I gathered on you, there was a story about a young man who had had a uniquely disfiguring event where his face was blown off, I think you said. And can you tell us about that night? That seems especially poignant to me. Is it? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I can, okay. Because this young man has never left me. And he stayed with me all these years, I think, to comfort me. And because I had to let him go. What else could I do? But it was in Vung Tau, and this young man had come into the surgical intensive care unit, and I was working on the 60-bed unit, and it was quiet that night. Things were pretty, they were okay, and we had four nurses on duty that night and a bunch of medics. And so they called me, the chief nurse called me and said, I want you to go over to ICU tonight and just sit with this young man because he's not going to make it through the night. So I get over there, and there's a chair. They've put a chair by his bed, and I sit down. First, I read his chart. I look to see what his chart says, and I do his vital signs. And he's a patient that is considered unexpectant, and that he's expected to die. And the nurses on the unit didn't want him to die alone, and they were busy in their unit, and they couldn't stay with him, and they couldn't comfort him, so they wanted somebody to be with him through the night. And I looked at his face, which wasn't there. It was, to tell you, he looked like a mummy. He was wrapped from head practically to foot. He was just wrapped everywhere. His whole body was wrapped. And I had to pull back the sheets to hold his hand. And his hand, he was wrapped to the wrist. And I pulled his hand out, and his hand was black. He was an African-American young man, and I would not have known that if I hadn't found his hand to hold it. And I told him my name, and I told him I was going to be with him, and I would not leave his side, and I asked him to squeeze my hand if he could hear what I said. And I expected, his hand was very cold and without feeling. And I didn't expect a response, and he gave me a very light. I know that he heard me by the squeeze that he gave my hand. I know he heard me, and so I said to him, I don't remember his name, but I said his name, and I said, "Oh, I'm so glad that you can hear me." And I said, "So I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to you tonight, and I'm just going to keep talking, and I know you can't talk back." So then I had to come up with all these things. So I started with, I said, I wish I knew where you grew up. I'll tell you about where I grew up. And I told him all about the dairy farm, and I told him about my siblings, and told him about my parents. And I don't remember what all I told him, but I told him I loved horses. And I said, I wonder if you've ever ridden a horse. And I just kept talking and talking to him, and I just couldn't let go of him. And I just kept thinking if he could just hear me and know he was with me and know that he wasn't alone. And then his hand went completely. I knew that life was draining from him, and then life did drain from him.
How long were you with him before he lost him?
You know, when I look back, it was like a hallucination. It was like so surreal, because here I'm with this young man in Vietnam, and I was having a hard time letting go of him. And I don't know if it was, I can't tell you how many hours it was, but I do know it was several.
Okay.
And, but I've remembered him because later I remembered how angry I was that I was there with him and not his mother. How unfair that was. And that
maybe right then you were his mother, that even though you were 22 years old.
I was, but I wanted his mother to be there with him.
Tell me about your homecoming. You came back to the United States. You got on an airplane in Saigon, probably. I'm assuming Saigon. You flew back to San Francisco.
Travis Air Force Base.
Travis Air Force Base. Tell me about your memory of that homecoming? What was that like?
Well, our chief nurse had warned us in Vietnam. This is now going to be August, July 30th or whatever day I flew. But it's the summer of 69. And you know what's been happening in the United States during that time. And she warned us and said, do not wear your uniforms when you go. Just when you get into California, put on civilians. Well, what was I going to put on? I had on my uniform because I didn't have something else to wear. So I flew into Minneapolis, and I was shocked for what happened. My parents were late. My parents were always late. They were farmers, and if they had to get the hay in, and it was August, sure. And if Dad had to get the hay in, he would be late. And I was so grateful they were late, because when our plane got in, there were some hecklers at the baggage area. And these GIs were on the plane with me, and they were also in uniform. And as my duffel bag is coming down the chute, one of the GIs, who was an enlisted man, said to me, ma'am, I'll get that for you. And I mean, that's the way they were. They were just so respectful and just so great. And so this sergeant is getting my bag for me, and this heckler comes over and says to him, let her carry her own damn bag. She's in a man's army. And I just like turned 10 shades of pale, because the sergeant took him by the neck and started beating his face and hit him on the ground and was hitting him. And the other enlisted man who was with him, and I don't know if they knew each other, but he was trying to pull the sergeant off so the sergeant wasn't going to kill this guy, because he was beating on him pretty hard. And I just said to these hecklers, I said, it's not our fault. Don't blame us. We're over there fighting for you. And by then the security comes, and you know, these guys are out of there. And I said, you know, that's welcome home to these guys. Welcome home to me. You know, I'll never forget those guys, because what were they doing? They were standing up for me, just like they did in Vietnam. We took care of each other in Vietnam. And you know, what happened after that was Vietnam vets took care of each other after that. The country didn't take care of us, our neighbors didn't, the community didn't, basically. I'm generalizing here. There were a lot of good people who did good things for us too, like your story. But overall, you know, we would take care of each other once we got home, just like we took care of each other in Vietnam.